Hello, 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 drama listeners, and hello, Dylan.
Hey, Connor. It's insane that we are here talking before this episode because I didn't think the episode that's about to follow was ever going to happen.
Literally, did you think that today in general would happen 6 years of the podcast? Like, holy shit.
No, and we address it on the episode, but these dream guests of ours, Jinx Monsoon and Ben De La Creme, the reason I say I didn't think it was ever going to happen was because it was one of those ones where it's like, there's no way. There's no way we're actually going to have them on the podcast. And it's no secret we've been chasing Jinx for years, but the fact that we got our other icon, Dela, in the process, I mean, it is a pinch me moment. And that's why I feel like it's so fitting for our 6 year anniversary episode.
And y'all, this isn't the end of the anniversary celebration.
Very good point.
Dylan came up with an insane idea that since we're celebrating 6 years, let's release six episodes on the main feed this month. So, y'all, you're not even ready for some of this.
And half of them are already recorded, so it's definitely happening. No empty promises here.
Never from us.
We always deliver on the promise of the premise. I will say that.
Well, and Dylan, that's actually what I wanted to say to you because I was thinking about our little, pre-episode chatter here that we were going to do to kind of
Yeah.
like kick this off. Every single Tuesday, Wednesday for the last 6 years have been about the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's doesn't include all the other days of the week when we are posting, guest booking, ideating, recording, researching. You editing, me editing for like 2.5 of those years, Maggie editing for the first year, like everyone putting so much time and effort into it, but especially Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yeah, they've never been the same.
Never, especially yours. I mean, you edit the show at this point. I think it's been 2 full years that you've done it, just you.
Yes, because we were switching off for a little while. Once we had Maggie for the first year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Think just the first
And then
year.
she started grad school. Okay. Yeah, maybe it was just the first year. And then we were like, well, damn, I guess we have to figure out how to edit. And then it just, at that point, it was the pandemic, so we had not much else to do. And then
Yeah.
just became part of our lives.
Oh
So.
my God. Dylan, I was thinking about how, on the promise of the premise, every single Wednesday, a new episode of this podcast has come out, which is crazy. Crazy. Most podcasts do like a season or they
Right.
record a bunch and then have an editor like work on them for the next like 6 weeks and then they like take 3 weeks off. And you know what I mean? Like, we made this stupid idea to commit to weekly new releases, sometimes two, sometimes two plus a bonus. And we had big dreams for this podcast, and they've so many of them have come true, and we're still keeping it going. And I just feel like I'm so proud of us.
I know, let's pat ourselves on the back here because although we do tout that we're one of the few weekly theater podcasts, I do think that it's also a huge testament to us like not giving up ever. Like even in the scrappy days before the Twin Talks when we originally it was supposed to always be a guest and we would find people, like we would ask favors and we were truly boots on the ground, but the dream of drama. I like the way that you're framing it all. But I mean, honestly, Connor, did you think? I mean, I know that's it's what people say when they reach moments like this, but how long did you think this was going to last?
I had no idea. Like, it was, I'm actually stunned at the question.
I
How
know.
long do we think this will last?
Listen, at this point, we're going to blink, and another 6 years are going to go by. So who can really say?
God.
But I just want to thank everyone who listens every single week. Especially those who tell us that they listen, because in this world of instant gratification, it's nice to know that we're not just releasing into the void and people care about us and our guests and what we're doing. And honestly, at the end of the day, they're just nerds, like theater nerds, and love it just like we do and have loved it since we were little.
And if y'all love the podcast, there's never been a better time for you to join Drama Plus, which is our Patreon where we record extra episodes every single month. It's $5 a month and you get extra content. You get added to our close friends on Instagram. But that money does go to a good cause, which is supporting a small business, which is Drama with Connor and Dylan. And we are partnered with iHeartRadio Broadway, but we're ultimately still a small business, a startup, if you will.
Yeah, because we self-produce.
Literally. Like a housewife on her like fourth or fifth season, she's self-producing the whole way, Like Gisele Bryant, let's be honest. Love. Anyway, I think you should go to patreon.com/drama podcast. $5 a month. Give us a 6-year anniversary gift and a gift to yourself, ultimately, because it's so fun. My favorite episodes we record are the Patreons.
Really?
I think so. They're just so loose. They're so loose. And you let me be myself on them, Dylan.
Listen, I also think you said there's never been a better time to become a member of Drama Plus. I agree, because my personal favorite time to binge podcasts is during these next 2 months of like holiday season, when I'm running around doing errands, shopping, chores, travel, decorating, everything. And to have just like fun, cozy time capsules to get me through those times is something that I truly love. And so there's probably hundreds of Patreon episodes in addition to the 320 plus drama episodes that are also out there. But enough business talk.
Enough business.
This episode with Jinx and Dayla is so fun. Like I said a few times, a total dream come true. But all I have to say is we need to have them both back separately.
Yes, I agree.
I want to talk to them about all the other miraculous things they've been able to achieve in also a short period of time since they became stars.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite Snatch Game performance from either of them? Because they both have some pretty incredible snatches.
I really do love Bend of the Crumbs, Dame Maggie Smith. It's just so brilliant and lived in. The way that she genuinely thinks on her feet, it doesn't feel planned at all. And you can tell she lost herself in that character.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, that's my favorite Dayla one. And then for Jinx, it has to be Judy Garland.
Better than Little Edie?
Oh, damn. No, I think Little Edie's better.
You can be convinced of anything.
I can be. I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it. How she sang as Judy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when we watched the Judy, it was like, oh, she's won this whole thing.
Yeah.
She's cakewalking this entire competition. I mean, and that was a stacked all winners, all stars, but... yeah, the Judy is kind of like a crowning, maybe greatest Snatch Game of all time, actually.
But I will say, Dylan, Jinx doing Little Edie did bring Little Edie to the cultural forefront in ways, teaching the children about who that is in general, in ways that Drew Barrymore also did, but for a new generation.
And maybe even before her, Christine Ebersole.
Oh, wow. Wow. We get into so much with Jinx and Dayla. It's such a fun conversation. Like you said, I could not believe it was happening.
Obviously, it was recorded a few weeks ago, because you'll hear we talk about Halloween. We talk about Jinx just being done without Mary. You know, they've had two Mary Todds since then. Hannah Solo and Jane Krakowski have both played Mary Todd since Jinx. Yeah. So a lot has happened. And they were in the throes of developing their holiday show, which does start next week.
Speaking of their holiday show starting next week, you are coming to New York City next week. We're doing a tour de theater and seeing a ton of shows. What are you most excited for when you come to town?
Oh, that's such a hard question always, because it's like it's always a marathon of show going. And I always am just looking forward to the next, whatever the next thing is. It's like, I want to enjoy each moment as it comes. But the reason for the season is... Chess, starring friends of the pod, Aaron Tveit, Nicholas Christopher, and future friend of the pod, Leah Michelle, who is not confirmed to ever do the podcast, but is certainly a future friend of the podcast.
No, she will be doing it during the Chess press run. I'm telling you what, like, she will be doing it. Anyway, no, I agree. Chess is what I'm most excited for, but we've got a great lineup featuring friends of the pod, future friends of the pod, shows we just want to see.
Yeah. I obviously haven't been to the city since June, and a lot has opened, a lot has closed, and this is going to be my only chance to catch up on some Broadway, probably before my wedding. I don't think I'll be back again until next spring.
Wow. Chilling.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, I can't wait. And y'all stay tuned. We'll be obviously posting, recapping, sharing.
And you still have 5 more episodes to look forward to this month of drama, because this is one of 6, y'all. We're 6.
We literally should have like themed it to the 6 finale.
For 5 more episodes, we're 6.
Oh yeah, that's funny. For 5 more episodes, we're 6. That's good.
Wait, I do want to reflect on year 5 though of drama.
Oh, okay. This past year?
Yes, because it was crazy, okay? Megan Hilty, Marissa Jarrett Winokur, Laura Benanti, Jujubee, Amber Gray.
And that was just in the first month.
But I mean, it was gag after gag. And if I have any wish for year 6, it's to keep gagging.
And keep gagging, we will. All right, Dylan, I think we've made the listeners wait long enough for the Jinx and Dayla experience on drama.
Mm-hmm.
All right, y'all, time for the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I am so excited for this episode. It's been years in the making, dreams finally coming true.
Yes. We're going to say this is our 6-year anniversary episode. I think we should just decide right here and now. We're going to celebrate with two of our icons, our heroes. This just feels very right.
I know. I mean, literally, Dylan, when we launched this podcast, could you ever have dreamed we'd have these two on? I mean, we dreamed it, but like that it actually would come true?
No, never. It's a pinch me moment for sure.
I know. I love it. Let's not waste any time. Would you please read the introduction and bring them in?
Absolutely. Deck the drama, y'all. Our guests today are Jinx Monsoon and Ben de la Creme, who are joining us ahead of the 8th consecutive year of the Jinx and Dayla holiday show. This draggy duo will once again be bringing queer holiday cheer to 30 cities across the US and Canada with their brand new show. This award-winning musical comedy theater piece is directed, produced, and written by Ben de la Creme and co-created by Jinx Monsoon. These superstars were first introduced to the world on RuPaul's Drag Race and subsequently All Stars, where they inspired the masses, delivered iconic Snatch Game performances, and left indelible marks on the franchise. Now, when Dayla isn't writing and performing solo works, or perhaps directing sold-out Carnegie Hall and Edinburgh Fringe Festival shows, and when Jinx isn't starring on Broadway in 3 shows in 2 years, including Oh Mary, Pirates, the Penzance musical in Chicago, these two are using their joint sleigh for world domination. Together, these global superstars appeared in Clea DuVall's Happiest Season and their very own The Jinx and Dayla Holiday Special. They are fierce advocates for the queer and trans community, pillars of comedy and creativity, and continue to raise the bar so high it becomes the North Pole. In fact, The Daily Beast named them as the faces on the Mount Rushmore of Christmas alongside Mrs. Claus and Mariah Carey. Please welcome to Drama,
Jinx Monsoon and Ben de la Creme.
Hi.
Wow, hi. What an intro. Thank you.
You know, there was a second version of it that was even longer, but I just...
Let's hear it. Start it now.
You both are just so accomplished.
Thank you both for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having
us. Yeah, thank you for having us. It's, you know, I wanted to jump in and say... 6 years ago, when you were dreaming up people to have on this podcast, you could have dreamt a little higher, you know? I mean, well, we probably would have seen you on Grindr eventually, and you could have just asked yourself.
Oh, my God. No, I know. I should use Sniffies as like a booking apparatus for the podcast. You know, just walk around Hell's Kitchen.
Listen.
Well, we're so excited to have the two of you here with us today.
Always like to check in with our guests.
Are you well?
Yeah.
As well as I can be, sure.
I mean, so we're in Seattle right now, which is where we do our show build every year. We just, you know, because I'm based in LA, Jinx is based in Portland now. And, but a lot of the artists that we work with, our dancers, are still Seattle based, and Seattle's sort of our muse. So yeah, Jinx and I are physically together, at last. We've been working remotely for a while. And so, this is a really exciting part where we're gearing up. We're about to start rehearsals with our dancers, and I will say that it is a nice respite from the wild world outside to be like fully absorbed with a community you love in making some really fun art. So this is it's a hard moment, but it's a good moment.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I can only imagine there's that feeling of being home that just kind of restores you. And that's like the home that you've created. Dayla, you're originally from the East Coast, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But you both have found this amazing artistic community in Seattle or Portland, you know, by way of...
Well, they're 3 hours apart. So, you know, I was born and raised in Portland. I came to Seattle for college and then stayed here a long while. So it's like I don't know. Seattle and Portland have one of those city rivalries that doesn't make any sense because it's like we're so close, we should just conglomerate. I mean, it's all a war zone in their eyes anyway. So the liberal Pacific Northwest.
Jenks, have you come down from your Oh Mary run yet?
I have exorcised Mary from my body for the time being. And I don't know. It has been this way for a while, I guess. You know, really since Drag Race season five, you know, it's this weird thing of like you go on being who you've always been and being this person that you know everyone, like you've got your public persona and you've got your private persona or your private self, and both remain unchanged even though they evolve and grow through the years, you know. So it's like I'm me and I'm also Jinx Monsoon, Broadway actress, you know. I've accepted the dichotomy of life, and so sometimes that means I'm a Broadway star and sometimes that means I'm a trans woman in America, and that comes with all of that comes with. So you know, I've just embraced the duality of my existence like any witch would with aplomb.
Yes, I know it's witchy season, which I know that you're very much into the witchy world, but is it hard to jump into like Christmas a little bit early with the way that the holiday show kind of lines up with your schedule?
Well, Dayla and I have been doing it for so long that we both love Halloween, but we both, you know, you can't do every holiday. This year, however, Dayla went to Terror Vault, the brainchild of our good friend Peaches Christ, and I hosted the second annual vampire party at my own house in Portland, Oregon. So I think we got a little taste of Halloween, and some years we don't get any. So this year, I feel sated.
Thank goodness.
Dayla, did you have a chance to see Jenks and Oh Mary?
I did, yes. And I've had the opportunity to see O'Mary multiple times and got to see Cole in the role multiple times, which was incredible. And so, I mean, yeah, when Jinx got the call to be a part of O'Mary, it was such a natural fit. I was like, duh, and so going to see her, and it was amazing. I think I was there opening week. I
Yeah,
think
pretty
it was
early.
early in the run. Yeah, and it was just, I mean, it was just such a natural fit. I mean, it's really the style of comedy is right up Jinx's alley, so to speak. And she's exactly the kind of performer to bring that role to life. So it was amazing. I was getting to see her flex a lot of muscles that I have known about and seen flexed for quite some time. And it was like a whole new audience was getting to experience some of that, and it was amazing.
Oh.
I love it. Actually, that makes me think of something. Do you remember the first time you saw each other perform?
Oh, yeah. We talk about this a lot. You know, I think so. First of all, my favorite college professor, and she continues to be my theater mentor today, Kira McDonald. She was also the producer and curator of the Solo Performance Festival in Seattle. And she had encouraged Dayla to write one of the first iterations of her solo performance show, Terminally Delightful. And so Kira McDonald told me while I was still in college, like my senior year, when I graduate, I've got to go out into the drag world and find Ben De La Creme. And I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. I know hundreds of drag queens. How's this one going to be any more special, you know? Like, but then I went, I saw her perform at a Pride gig and she was hosting, and I got to see her banter and her persona and the way that she has created this like fully fleshed out like Commedia dell'arte persona in Ben De La Creme. And then she performed one of her signature lip sync numbers, which was this rendition of I've Been to Paradise, But I've Never Been to Me by Charlene, but the CD keeps skipping. This is dating us because we used to use CDs for our music, but the CD keeps skipping and she performs the skips. And then, like, she also performs like a conversation with the DJ about trying to fix the CD, you know? And I just thought it was so brilliant that immediately I just became dead set on working with her. So when she came to first see me, which she'll tell that story, but I already knew who she was. And when she introduced herself to me, I was like, I've been waiting to meet you. But we'd finally met in a Starbucks at 4 p.m. and she'll tell that story.
Yes, that is the circumstances under which Jinx and her incredible musical partner, who we work with a lot now, Major Scales. That's how I met them. Was I saw, I think on MySpace, I think I saw a post about this queen that I had heard a lot about and I kept seeing pop up was doing this show at a coffee shop near me. And so I went to see this thing they did in for free in the middle of the afternoon. There were a bunch of folding chairs stuck in the corner and like a Casio, and Jinx came out of like the public bathroom where she'd been changing, and they proceeded to put on one of the best shows I had ever seen in my life. And I was like, these two are so talented. We have got to be a team, you know? It's like, yeah, I immediately approached Jinx and Major, and I think the next thing that happened with us was I cast them in a 4th of July show, and that was don't worry, it was a scathing
Of
indictment of
course.
capitalism and our country.
She was having open auditions for the 4th of July show, and then eventually she'd have open auditions for her annual holiday show she had been putting on locally in Seattle. So basically, because of Kira McDonald telling me to go find this queen and work with her, and because of our like shared appreciation of what the other one did, when she had auditions, I just did anything I could to get cast in her stuff. And that developed through the years where we started working more and more together. And nowadays we work as colleagues and partners in what we do. But it all started with Dela producing shows and me wanting to act in them. And that's what we're doing these days. And it's just the biggest version of that.
Right. And oh my goodness, did the two of you put on the best shows? We've had the chance to see both of you in solo capacities together. We saw the Christmas show in New York, and Santa Fa La La was in that one.
Oh,
Havana. Yeah, that's the Havana cover.
there's two versions of that song.
Oh, really?
One is the Havana parody, and then we rewrote it as like a TLC style, like 90s vibe later. Which one was the one you saw?
It was Havana.
I think it was the Havana one.
Okay, that was year one. That was 2018.
Oh
Oh my
my, see, the
goodness.
COVID years get mixed up in our
Yeah.
brains, so it's hard
Yeah.
to remember sometimes. Wow. I mean, bop.
When I think of that, I'm like, what? But yes, then I did a different version of Santa Fa La La later. So it, listen, it could have been either one.
Yes.
But yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for supporting the arts.
Yes. Oh my
Absolutely.
goodness.
Oh my God. Well, 8 years of doing the Jinx and De La Holiday show. Congratulations to both of you. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it's been incredible to have it grow in the way it has.
And that's, I mean, we've got to thank our audiences there because, like, our show has been able to grow to what it is because people come to support it. You know, like, we couldn't have moved into bigger venues and started putting on bigger productions with higher budgets if the audiences didn't come out. You know, like, our show has grown partially because of our hard work and partially because of the support our community has shown. And, you know, simply put, if no one buys the tickets, then we can't keep doing this every year. But luckily, people keep buying the tickets and we keep getting to do it. Yeah. But that keeps us really focused on, you know, recognizing that this is a community event. It might be us on stage, but we do this for our dancers. We do this for the artists we work with every year. We do this for our audiences. And every time, you know, something's going on in the world and people need that 2 hour escape. And then they tell us after the show, you know, thank you so much for tonight because we just needed this. that's what I need too. You know, I need that 2 hour escape just as much as they do. And hearing that it means just as much to them as it does to me just keeps me going and not taking it for granted, you know. And I carried that spirit into all the work I've done separate from Dayla. Like, Oh Mary was a wonderful escape for a lot of people, but it also was an escape for me every day, because at the same time I'm being targeted by my government, I get to play the first lady every night and go completely ape shit. It's all very cathartic.
Oh yeah, I'll bet. And it's such a beautiful night, the experience. I know that it changes from year to year, the holiday show specifically. Are you kind of throughout the year getting ideas, thinking about it? Is it always an ever-present thing in your mind?
It's always simmering on the back burner, you know. It's like such a big part of our year now that it's, you know, when something pops up in the world around us that feel right, like it's hard not to be like, okay, let's store that away, you know. But yeah, I mean, but the pace at which we actually make this thing is, if I do say so myself, kind of astounding. Like, it's because we really start, and this year again is a little different because I'm taking on the head writer role while Jinx was doing the Broadway thing, but you know, we're still doing the Broadway thing, but we're still you know, but we're still in constant conversation and kind of bouncing ideas around and stuff. But generally, this process starts like at the beginning of September, and then we premiere the show at the top of November. And so it's like from incarnation to being on stage is 2 months. And that's kind of unheard of for something on our scale. And, you know, when we started talking, like, I mean, this has grown so big last at this point that, you know, it's like backstage after a show talking to people who are like working on Broadway, working on film. They're like, you do it in how long? But we're like, this is what we know. This is what drag queens do. Drag queens like make it happen. And, you know, so I feel at one point it was like, oh, our means are limited and that's why we have to work so balls to the wall. And now I'm like, oh, it's a point of pride how we are able to do this. And we're also able to do it like that because of the community we've gathered. We have incredible dancers, choreographer, artists that we work with who we have the same shorthand with that we have with each other. So we're able to kind of come together as a hive mind and make it happen.
You know, I think that queer artists are especially apt for making art in time of crisis and in time of duress, because rarely have we experienced creating art that wasn't met with some kind of, you know, like we've had protesters at every tour we've ever done. Right. Like we're no stranger to adversity. So I kind of look back on these years and I'm like, during the pandemic, a lot of drag queens found new ways to thrive. A lot of queer artists found new ways to present their artwork. A lot of people started integrating with technology in new ways to get their art out there, because we've always worked under these extenuating circumstances. And now we're at this point where our existence is being politicized. And young people ask me all the time, like, how do you keep going? And I kind of like, I just remember back to when I was your age and this was how it was back then. And unfortunately, you know, people are trying to push us backwards in the progress that we've experienced. But those of us who remember the before times are still here, and we're not going to let that happen. We'll fight hoof and nail, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we're grateful for it. We're grateful that the two of you use your platform in that way. It's really incredible. And you're able to balance still, you know, bringing comedy and creativity. Jinx, you mentioned about being younger and sort of having that spirit and love of the arts. We do like to ask all of our guests about the moment that got them into this crazy business we call show. We call it the Ring of Keys moment. It's a song from the musical Fun Home. I'm not sure if either of you are familiar.
Yeah. Those keys.
Okay.
Period.
Thank goodness. Oh my goodness. Didn't know we would get a live vocal today. I feel so lucky about
this. I love it.
Do either of you feel like you have a moment, maybe it was a performance, seeing a performer, something like that got you into the arts for the first time?
It's really easy for me. It was the movie Death Becomes Her. In one film, I saw everything I ever wanted to do as an artist. You know, like, it's everything. I refer to that film as one of the more perfect films that's ever existed. But it was neither Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn, or Isabella Rossellini in particular. It was literally all three of them being in one film together and watching, you know, A-list celebrities do drag in a mainstream box office film. When I was 5 years old, I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do with my life. And then when I found drag, it was like, oh, that's how I'll do it. And now, you know, through the years, it's been this combination of being a trans queer actor as well as a drag performer. And I just kind of, I used to think that it was about ping-ponging back and forth. And now I realize that it's all the same. You know, when I look wow. back on Death Becomes Her in retrospect, all I can think is that's Goldie Hawn, Isabella Rossellini, Meryl Streep, and Bruce Willis doing drag. You know, the year I was born.
100%. Such an ahead of its time movie, too, in terms of special effects and everything, you know?
Oh, I mean, I have to say, it's like, I mean, Jinx and I share a real passion for that film. And I have to say, it's like, it's actually, that is such a beautiful moment for special effects in Hollywood. There's like so much creative problem solving before we just were like, okay, everything's a digital solution. Yeah. And the combination of practical effects in that, it is... Like, I think, and, you know, the other Robert Zemeckis film that, to me, like, my top two is that and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which, like, you know, the Goldie Hawn appearance at the book signing and Jessica Rabbit, like, they're the same look. It's just like, I mean, Robert Zemeckis was just creating queer icons for some reason, but
so true.
But like, they're both these really creative solutions to trying to figure out how to do something really visually ambitious before we got into all the digital stuff. And I do think that there's a reason that drag queens gravitate towards stuff like that, because it's like creative problem solving in order to like make something fun and wild and beautiful that we haven't seen before. You know, I think it's like very similar vibes. Both of those films were that for me growing up, that, you know, those Jim Henson, all the Muppet movies, Labyrinth, Pee-wee's Playhouse, all those things were things for me that really fed my aesthetic, you know. And I know Jinx was similar in this regard too. We've kind of always been doing what we do. Like, as a very little kid, before I knew what any of that was, I was performing. I was like in my room using my stuffed animals to tell stories. I was like, I didn't know that was directing, you know. But it's like, both Jinx and I think, you know, I say a lot of the time, when I first saw the Wigstock documentary, I was like, oh wow, this world of drag. I didn't see it. I wasn't like, oh, that's, I want to do drag when I grow up. I was like, oh, that's the thing I am. Oh, there's a place to do this. And so I think something that happens in the world of drag a lot is it like rides this line between artistic practice and identity. And so like you find yourself within it rather than like finding it. It's like meeting a soulmate, but the soulmate is an art form. I don't know.
Yeah, because even though Death Becomes Her sent me on this trajectory, it was like specific drag artists doing it in a way that really resonated with me, that made me realize, oh, drag is anything I want it to be. Like, Charles Bush is big to both Dayla and I. And for me, Die Mommy Die is one of my favorite movies, because it was watching a drag performer create a character that's just like any other character that would fit into that film. And she just happens to be a drag performer playing it. But that has nothing to do with the plot or the script or anything. She's an actress. And then I saw All About Evil, written and directed by written and directed by Beaches Christ, who's a wonderful friend to both of us. And I'm like, oh, drag queens can even write and direct the film and just cameo in it. Like, like, look at Peaches writing a horror movie starring celebrities that are in everything else. You know, it's like drag queens, the only ones who try to limit us are outside people. But when we realize that actually we're allowed to do anything, and because who's the fuck's going to stop us? Like, we just have to take that same punk rock attitude we possessed when we first put on the corset and garter belt, you know, and take that into everything. Because to even be a drag queen at all is saying that you reject society's rules. And I think, you know, that's what's universal about drag and why so many people resonate with it.
Right.
Regardless of their identity or orientation.
I just have to say, speaking of, you know, Natasha Lyonne, like, starred in All About Evil with Peaches Christ and that. But like 2001, I saw Charles Bush's film adaptation of Psycho Beach Party, and Amy Adams' turn as Marvel Ann is amazing. If anybody hasn't seen Psycho Beach Party.
I have not seen it.
And Natasha Lyonne's in Die Mommy Die too.
Get your hands on Psycho Beach Party. It is incredible.
Oh, Beth Broderick is a friend to the show.
Oh my God. Okay.
Beth Broderick's in Psycho Beach Party. And then one day we saw her in the Delta Air Lounge. And then the next day she was in LA at our show, and it's Aunt Zelda. Like, this is our life. It's so fun.
That's crazy. Oh my God.
Jinx, did Beth Broderick do hijinks when you were doing your podcast?
Yes, she sure did.
I remember that.
I had Caroline Ray and Beth Broderick and Jenna Lee Green, and it was my hope to one day have Melissa Joan Hart and every woman who had been on Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
And then Salem, and then...
And then Salem, yeah.
Even in the later years, like a Soleil Moon Frye.
I also was working my way through all of the women of Mad TV.
Yes.
I used my podcast as a way to just worship the actresses from my childhood who taught me how to be funny. You know?
I think that's what Connor and I are doing right now, just in case you want to feel like you're in good company.
Oh, I see it. I recognize it.
Yeah, yeah.
Dayla, you mentioned Pee-wee's Playhouse. I mean, huge for us as kids as well. And having seen your solo work and also with the Christmas show, I see the influences coming through with puppetry and objects come to life and such. And it really is so special to see that through line.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special is, I think, one of the finest pieces of media ever created. And, you know, Paul Rubens was, I mean, if anybody listening or watching hasn't seen the documentary that came out this year about him, it's just incredible. You know, and it's his coming out. He comes out late in life right before he passes, and I'm glad he got the opportunity to. But it's like, you know, Pee-wee's Playhouse was so transgressively queer. Like, it really, you know, even with him not being out, it was like, it was all over it. And so many queer kids were drawn to it. And it endures in queer culture and in culture at large. But it really, like, speaks to, I think, what is so special about, I mean, it's got the same kind of camp Charles Bush is bringing to the screen, you know? And so, yeah, I fell so in love with it. And it's also, I think one of the things that's really cool about Pee-wee's Playhouse is it's a variety show disguised as not a variety show. And that's also kind of what Jinx and I continue to do, is we're doing a variety show. It's also a narrative show. And that kind of like weird hybrid mashup, I think Pee-wee is what sort of like introduced me to the idea that those things could all live in the same world, you know?
Absolutely.
Yes, I remember that with the special that was on Hulu. The inclusion of Nanog was one of my favorite elements of that.
Yeah, I have been a real puppet lover since I was a kid. And actually for a while, like, you know, When I was younger, I think I want to be an animator or like work at Muppet Studios, you know, like that was actually what I thought I wanted to do for a little while. So yes, to me, puppets and drag go hand in hand, and there will almost always be some element of puppetry included in what I do, what we do.
So will there be any recurring characters from years past in this Christmas show coming up?
We don't know yet.
Well, I do.
Jinx Adela, for sure.
There are no recurring characters from past shows, but we do have the same incredible cast who has brought a lot of those characters to life in the past. So, you know, I mean, we are so fortunate that, you know, a lot of both the cast and the crew have just been with us for so long and are part of the family. So, you know, every year we throw new different weird challenges at them. You know, I think specifically of Ruby Mimosa, who is this incredible burlesque performer that, you know, we worked with for a long time before this exists. She's like this incredible sexy, like powerhouse of a burlesque performer. Last year we were like, okay, you're a cowboy Santa Claus. And she nailed this character, Country Dancing Santa, and she brought him to life. And it's like these performers, they trust us, and they're willing to just do these wild things. And
Not to single out, all our dancers are so talented and so wonderful. But this year, Jim Kent is returning to our cast, and one of my favorite characters ever was Jim Kent as the Ghost of Christmas Present, and we dressed him like a present, like a human present, in which he was wearing a morph suit, like a metallic morph suit, metallic oversized sneakers and a giant bow, and he communicated through movement and jingling bells. And I just love that because he wasn't a puppet, but he became a puppet because Dela imagines puppets in all kinds of ways. Sometimes it's a water bottle that just flaps back and forth. You know, sometimes it's a like Nanog, you know, it's an inanimate object that's come to life. And sometimes the puppet is a person in a puppet costume, much like the Jim Henson Studio has utilized through the years. Like we've honored a lot of puppetry schematics in our show. We had a two-person Ghost of Christmas Future costume. We've had puppets operated by multiple people. I mean, I was a giant cake last year. Every year, we kind of just throw out all the ideas, and we don't throw them out for being too outlandish until we realize, until we really work with it and see if it's possible or not. And last year, it was possible for me to play a 20-foot German cake, a German chocolate cake. German cake sounded like it
I'll have a slice of
was
that.
German chocolate cake.
I love it. I absolutely love just the spirit of creativity and how much you throw at it. Like, it brings everyone so much joy. Is there anything you want to tease from this year's Christmas show? Not necessarily a spoiler, but a little tease of what people can expect.
Yes, you know, every year we come up with new ideas. We have to like top whatever we've done last, and it always gets like stranger and stranger the more that we have to like just figure out, okay, what's the new way to do it, right? And so it's fun because it forces creativity, but it's also very difficult. We generate a lot of ideas that we get really excited about, but they don't all fit into everything. So we sort of have like a vault of these great ideas that haven't worked yet that every year we sort of like take out and like look at again. And we're like, eh, does it fit this year? And it doesn't. So this year, you know, Jinx being on Broadway, like allowed, trusted me to like sort of take on the head writer thing. And as that, you know, in that role, I was like, what if we do an anthology? What if Jinx and Dela have to like live through the experience, try to put on a show while an anthology like Tales from the Crypt or Twilight Zone happens to them? So now all of these ideas that weren't necessarily 2-hour ideas, but make a solid 20-minute idea, we get to like bring them all out and like fully bring them to fruition. So this year, people get for the very first time a whole bunch of Jinx and Dela holiday stories.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
This is great.
It's like
It's gonna be fun.
it's like cracking open a piñata.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. So switching gears from Christmas for just a sec, I am curious because you both have done so many different aspects of performing arts. Do either of you have a favorite performance of each other's that comes to mind that you just loved?
And it can't be the origins that you both loved so much earlier,
Oh
you
yeah.
said.
Oh, wow. All right, that's rude.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. So I have never had anything to do with Dela's production, Beware the Terror at Gaylord Manor. And, you know, I would have been involved with it at the time if I had the schedule availability, because I mean, like, you know, Dela writes a new show and I just presume I have a part in it. But I was unable to work on that. And then once it was built, you know, she kept the same cast every year, so I was never able to join it. But one year I finally got to see it, and Dela Dayla wrote the entire play and then starred as the ingenue, and the character was very, very far away from the Benda LaCrim persona. Like, she was somehow stupider and meaner than Dayla ever could be. Dayla's not a mean character, but she's quite dumb. But Dayla wrote herself a really wonderful character in the context of a really wonderful show. And it's just one of my favorite things that she's done that I have nothing to
I have to say, I'm really proud of that show and I miss it because it was a Halloween show that happened every year. But part of why it doesn't happen anymore is because this show has grown so much that we have to sort of work through the season. And that's like, you know, as sad as I am that we don't get to do that anymore, obviously it's a real blessing that this has grown in the way that it has. You know, I would say, I mean, Jinx has done a lot of amazing stuff, and she and her musical partner, Major Scales, have done a lot of amazing stuff. But I would say that one of my favorites is The Ginger Snapped, which was an album and a stage show. And it was just more and more over the years, I've seen Jinx, who is a brilliant comedian, get more comfortable with leaning into moments of like sincerity and like being more vulnerable on stage. And she's really like, I mean, I think seeing her as Audrey in Little Shop of Horrors was like an incredible, like, she went so far with that, and it was really amazing to watch. But The Ginger Snapped is like an original work that she and Major made, and it really like it was funny, it was hilarious, it was bawdy, it was all the things you want. The music was incredible, and it also was like exploring mental health, and I thought it was a really great show.
It was a show about Jinx realizing that she needs to finally see a therapist. And it was both happening in real life and on stage. It was like me. This was the year that I just basically started writing down things that were happening to me and putting it on stage. And Dayla said, that remains to be my writing style.
Aw. Listen, they say write what you know.
Really just says what's happening.
Art imitates life, y'all.
And vice versa.
Right.
And vice versa, for sure. Oh my gosh. Well, we adore you both so much. We have to sadly wrap up, but before we say goodbye, we'd love to hear if either of you have a dose of drama. This could be a little pop culture recommendation, a rant, a rave, something in pop culture that you feel like you want to bring to the forefront so our listeners can go home and take a bite out of those German chocolate cakes of drama.
Well, if you are somehow unaware of the show Oh Mary, go see it because it is one of those singular shows of a generation that just deserves everything that's come its way. I truly cannot back that show up enough, and I recommend it. I also really love American Dad, and I can't think of anything more on the opposite end of the spectrum. And you know, when I need to unplug my brain, I put on American Dad, and I'm not saying it's a perfect show or that all the rhetoric is sound, but when they write funny lines, they write such funny lines that I'm like, oh my God. Like yesterday, I couldn't stop saying, you can't touch a star, they're suns. And I just think that line is so fucking funny.
Oh, that's so cute. I love those recommendations.
Yeah, you know, it's like talking about things that are like current recommendations is so weird and hard right now because we talk about this a lot, how there's like zero monoculture. Like there's nothing that we don't have water cooler shows anymore. There's nothing that we're like all talking about and sharing in real time, which I think is a
Yeah.
bummer. So it's like we're all out there watching disparate stuff. It's like the stuff that I'm watching is like, you know, half the time from like 10 years ago, or like or just a thing where it's like I am just like caught up to something that's like a season old. And also I watched such I suddenly Seth Rogen is like in my life, like The Studio and Platonic are both really, really incredible shows that like kind of took me by surprise.
Yes.
So like I almost never am feeling like I'm recommending or talking about like mainstream media that has nothing to do with queer people, but they're both great shows.
Yes.
And I really like the studio is so technically impressive in terms of like the way it's shot, the way it's written. And Platonic, I think, is like actually a really special, rare exploration of like two straight people of opposite genders who have no sexual tension. And it's actually really like a cool and refreshing cultural take. And it's a very very sweet show and uplifting, and I like it a lot.
God, I'm obsessed with the studio, but...
And Overwatch's annual Halloween season just began, so that's what I'll be doing as soon as I have time. It's my favorite time of year, Halloween on Overwatch.
Well, thank you both so much for giving us your time today. I know that you're in the middle of a big press blitz for the holiday show, which we're going to make sure everybody gets their tickets to, but we admire the two of you so much. You brought us so much joy over the years, and so we're very grateful to be able to tell you that and also have a lovely conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been really wonderful chatting with you guys.
We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Okay. So Jinx and Dayla had to go. These queens had to Christmas fa-la-la.
We were just one stop on the Polar Express. And they are busy, 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 obviously. That was crazy. And so much fun. I was speechless. I was actually a bit tongue-tied with that episode, which has only happened a few other times on the pod before.
Oh, Dylan, before we say goodbye on this episode, we need to give some doses of drama.
Yes. Oh, my God. I have been loving this season of Only Murders in the Building. And I know that you and I haven't really gotten the chance to chat about it, but it is funny. They're back in the building. I feel like they're really back to basics in many ways. This is my drama. I ended up catching an early episode of the show. I just wanted to put something on while I was working. And I found myself enraptured in the first season in a way that was like, oh, there's a reason the show caught on, was extremely special, quirky, mysterious, hilarious, that I think it's maybe lost a little bit of its luster in the last couple of years.
Okay, I've been feeling weirdly about it too. Do you think it's because so many people have died in the building that there's just less of a fun supporting cast?
I wouldn't say that, because I do think that the supporting players this season have been so much fun. I mean, it's been so many Oscar winners and Oscar nominees, but
totally.
I don't know. It's
yeah.
And obviously a few familiar Broadway faces here and there.
Beanie, hello.
Beanie, Bobby Cannavale. I don't know. There was an anxiety and a mystery. I think they really leaned into like the serial or the true crime element of the first season, that it's now become something a little bit different. And I mean, Selena looks really different. And
yeah,
there's been a lot of changes. And obviously you need to do that to keep a show fresh. But for anyone who's not loving the current season, I do encourage you to go back and revisit the first, because there is a charm that I think, and it was, you know, it was a COVID show. It was very contained, very focused. I think people were grateful to be working. I think the writers were dusting off their pen and pad and paper with the inspiration of creating their Macbeth during the bubonic plague.
Oh, period.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I feel like I really like this season. I've laughed a lot, especially at Steve Martin. I feel like he had a great season.
Love him. I agree with you. He has had a great season. And here's the thing. I'm still loving it. I still really look forward to it every week.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's lost its original luster.
I feel like the Mabel character is giving me pause. What does she do?
Podcasts. And I think that she's the full-time podcast producer.
Okay. I guess it makes sense. She does kind of keep the show, their show going.
And she's kind of an artist, right?
She was. But then she bought a unit in the building, right? Didn't that building look different this year?
Very different.
I said this to my friend. They were like, I think they upgraded to new cameras and relocated some of the set. And I was like, well, that would make sense.
Revisit season one.
I need to revisit season one. Okay. I love the scene where Taya Leone and Steve Martin are at that hibachi and they're catching vegetables. So funny. Oh my God. Okay. My dose of drama is I went to see Prince Faggot, which moved from Playwrights Horizons to Studio C View. It keeps getting extended.
Which Studio C View is the artist formerly known as the Tony Kaiser Theater for Second Stage.
Period. It's where we famously saw Mike Feist in that Vietnam era play where he did show Cock and Balls from Behind.
Right, right.
This was before Challengers. If we knew then what we knew now, I mean.
We knew.
He was amazing.
He was the reason we bought tickets to see that play.
Yeah, because we heard he showed Cock and Balls from Behind. But wait, I'll also say a Tony winner was also in that play.
A Tony winner that you and I recently dissected their post-Tony career.
Which has been off the stage.
Yes, almost exclusively. And that's Lauren Patton. But that's drama for a different day. You were talking about Prince F, as I heard it's affectionately called.
Yes, yes. I don't know why they call it people. I get why some people call it that, but I feel like it defeats the purpose of why the playwright called her Prince Faggot when people call it Prince F.
Well, I don't think everyone's allowed to say that word.
Right. But we're allowed to. So I'm going to say it.
We are.
Right. We are allowed to say it. So I saw it at Playwrights this summer and I saw it again at Studio Seaview. And I would be curious to talk to anybody who has seen any version of it, because I thought some updates were due when I saw it last time, that they would tighten it up in some ways, specifically with how long some of the scenes are going into this next version of it. And it was basically the same show. So that was a little bit disappointing, because I felt like they could have taken that opportunity.
Was it a direct transfer?
Basically. They took like a month off or something.
Yeah, that's probably why.
I don't know. Preview periods are like that long. So I don't know why I thought they would change more stuff.
Yeah, and it keeps extending and extending. At the time of recording this, I don't know.
And protect queer art.
Yes, absolutely. To quote another Drag Race girl. Oh my God, we didn't talk about Drag Race at all with Jinx and Dayla. So
I know. Next time we absolutely will.
I'm excited about the holiday season. I cannot wait to spend it seeing some incredible queer art, as you just referenced. And Jinx and Dayla's holiday show is definitely going to be one of those. I know it's coming to Columbus. I know it's going to New York. Our listeners are everywhere. Support the dolls. Protect the dolls. And
period.
Follow them on social media. Jinx is at The Jinx and Ben de la Creme is at Ben de la Creme. And we're at Dylan McDowell, at Connor McDowell, and at The Drama Podcast.
Thank you all for supporting us for 6 years, or if this is your first episode of Drama, you got 6 years worth of weekly content to go revisit.
Yes.
And much to look forward to. So
always. Thanks for a crazy wild ride, y'all.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you, Connor. And I will see you next time.
Drama.